From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. It's not all that often you get surprised in Utah politics, but the party conventions over the last weekend weren't completely predictable. Various groups have been pushing to get more moderate voters involved earlier in the process, and it may be working. Conservative establishment figures like David Clark, Carl Wimmer, Stephen Sandstrom, they were all defeated over the weekend. Tea Party supporters were unable to unseat Utah Senator Orrin Hatch. And then there's the relative newcomer to Utah politics, the mayor of Saratoga Springs, Mia Love. She's going to be leading the fight to defeat Democratic Congressman Jim Matheson. Today in the program, we're surveying the political landscape as the season moves into the next phase. We'll talk about the parties, the candidates, and see how the races are shaping up for the 2012 election year. Join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. It would be hard to argue Utah politics is in for some dramatic change in 2012. But after the party conventions over the weekend, there is some reason to say some kind of shift may be going on. Different groups have been trying to get more moderate voters involved earlier in the process. Leaders of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints read statements from their pulpits last month encouraging members to attend caucus meetings. And we may have seen the results at the conventions, where a group of Republican Party stalwarts and former lawmakers were defeated in favor of newcomers. You saw Orrin Hatch come within just a few votes of avoiding a primary race. Tea Party supporters were hoping to oust the senator like they had with Bob Bennett 2 years ago. The biggest surprise for observers may have been the victory of Saratoga Springs Mayor Mia Love. The mayor is an African-American woman, staunch Republican, and she's going to be running against Democratic Congressman Jim Matheson in the newly created 4th Congressional District. Today in the program, we're talking about Utah politics as the races are now coming into focus, and we invite you to join the conversation with your own observations about Utah politics, questions, comments. You can call 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'd also like to hear from you on Facebook or on Twitter. Terry Gilday is with us here in the studio, KUER's news director. He's been covering the race so far, although new to it. It'll be interesting to get your perceptions. Terry, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Doug.
We have with us Robert Gerke, government reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. Robert, welcome back.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Doug.
Lisa Riley Roche is with us, covers state and national politics for the Deseret News. Welcome back.
Thanks, Doug.
And we have John Daly with us, a political reporter for KSL-TV and the Deseret News. And John, welcome to you.
Thanks, Doug.
We should mention you can find links to articles by our guests here on our website, kuer.org/Radio West. Okay, well, let's start with the conventions over the weekend. And I guess what may have been one of the most significant things, John, I'll start with you, was the turnout. Was it noticeably different? I mean, a lot more people, different kinds of people, I guess?
Yeah, I think that clearly the veterans who've been around the block and involved in the process made that observation. I went to both, and the Democrats were saying that it was the biggest turnout that they had had. And I went from there over to the Republicans, and the Democrats event was just dwarfed. I mean, maybe a tenth of the size. But the Republicans, too, I think they feel they've got a lot of people involved and new people, and it seems to be a lot of energy on both sides.
Do you guys sense a different atmosphere, more drama than in the past? Or, I mean, what did you think?
I think this year you had a lot more races that were being contested on the Republican side, not so much on the Democratic side, but they had twice as many races this time, and they were pretty hotly contested. I mean, the 2nd District race had a whole flood of candidates in it. The 4th District race had been a pretty hard fought, and then you had the headline with Senator Hatch and Dan Lilienquist going against each other. So I think there was a lot of energy at the Republican one because they had so many tough contested races. The Democrats, I think, probably saw a lot more people coming out as well. They really only had the one Senate race that was being decided there. But I think you mentioned the encouragement from the LDS Church to get involved in the process. And I think that really you saw that pay a lot of dividends for them, in terms of driving turnout.
Well, we had put together a panel of delegates, Deseret News and KSL-TV. We chose 8 people, trying to get some good sense of representation. A number of them were new to the process. And what really struck us is how committed they were to finding out about these candidates. And so they brought – I think that really contributed to that energy Robert's talking about. They really worked hard at getting to know the candidates and the issues. And yet a number of them were swayed at convention in some of the races. Mia Love's very strong speech.
Yeah.
For example, the brouhaha in the second district race. Both of those ended up not going to primary, probably because you had so many new delegates who were reacting to the events of the day based on what was happening, but also based on all of the effort they had put into getting to know the candidates. They felt they had the confidence to go ahead and say, no, we don't need a primary here. We're comfortable going forward.
But how were they different, the delegates? I mean, you know, the idea was to get more moderate people out. Did that in fact turn out to be what happened?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think if you look at the results and you look at what happened to Bob Bennett in 2010,
yeah.
I think a similar convention might have ended up with different results in some of these races. And one of those races might have been that Carl Wimmer, Steve Sandstrom, Mia Love race. In fact, Carl Wimmer, when we talked to him after he was beaten by Mia Love, we asked him what happened. And he said, you know, different convention, different delegates. So yeah. I think that you could see it in some of those results. Another thing that's probably worth mentioning is the Democrats were very aggressively trying to court some of those LDS moderates. And they've got an LDS Democratic caucus, which is brand new, a new LDS outreach coordinator. And that position's only been in place, I guess, for a couple of months. And they told me at their convention that's now the biggest caucus that they have, bigger than the Labor caucus, which used to be the biggest.
Wow.
And I think they said it's 1,200 members or something like that. So the numbers by Republican standards are probably still modest. But I think at both conventions you were hearing that there are some more moderates that are now energized and involved that maybe weren't in 2010.
I think one of the most striking things at the Republican convention, John mentioned Bob Bennett, they gave him an award at the 2012 convention, and he got a standing ovation from a group of delegates who were, you know, 2 years ago
booing him
and jeering him and voted him out of office. I think the Utah Foundation did a delegate survey before the convention, and on the Republican side, 2 years ago, 37% of them were Tea Party supporters. This year, that number had dropped to 19%. So you can see that it was a much more moderate group of delegates. The other thing that I thought was really fascinating was that 74% of them last time were LDS on the Republican side. And this year, that number had jumped up to 92%.
Wow.
And so almost, you know, you're getting close to 100% of the delegates there being LDS. And that's a pretty remarkable figure, I think. And I think it shows the effect of what the church tried to do.
Just a quick comment about Bob Bennett real quick. That was a really interesting moment at the convention. He was given this award for service to the Republican Party. And then he started walking off stage. He wasn't about to give any kind of speech or comment. And I think that everyone in the audience, especially the reporters in the media area, were sort of like, I wonder if there's any bad blood between Bennett and, you know, and the delegates. And then Thomas Wright asked him to come back out, and Bob Bennett, in the eloquent fashion that he does, you know, got out and really let everyone there in the room know that he appreciated their support over the years, and there was a real sense of camaraderie with him and the Republicans. It was just a really interesting moment.
What did you notice, Terry, about – you don't have anything to compare it to really yet. I mean, what did you notice about the just sort of the nature of it? The convention itself.
Well, I was at the Republican convention for, I think, about 13 hours like we all were. But I guess I was intrigued by the fact that I think the Utah Republican Party is a bigger tent than most people give it credit for. There were all kinds of delegates coming up to the microphone between the speeches, talking about different issues that were important to them. I think that I expected more of a Tea Party presence, but we didn't see that with Hatch getting 59.14% of the vote. I think that Governor Herbert seemed a little surprised that he went to a second round of voting against Morgan Philpott. And when Morgan Philpott got up during his second round speech and implored the delegates to move this to a primary, it didn't happen. So I think that what had happened in 2010 with Mike Lee and Bob Bennett and some of the more Tea Party attitudes and sentiments were not necessarily as present as they were in this one.
Well, talking about the race with Governor Herbert, what was really interesting was what happened with the Tea Party candidate, David Kirkham, one of the founders of the Tea Party here in Utah. He actually got up in the second round and stood behind and endorsed the governor and probably swayed enough votes away from Phil Pott to secure the governor's place as the nominee. The idea that a Tea Party candidate would endorse an incumbent, who expected that?
So what was that about? And the other question, though, is I wanted to hear you all on this. Is the Tea Party, in terms of its influence, pretty diminished at this point?
Well, think about this. When Bennett was ousted at the last nominating convention, that was sort of a sort of the cutting edge. It was sort of a precursor to what was happening nationally with the what we called Tea Party, but really it was a lot of different groups, a lot of different anger and frustration out there, kind of materializing as a Tea Party movement, if you will. Maybe this time we're seeing the same thing here, kind of a cutting edge, lack of influence, maybe less frustration and anger, and more. Just getting incumbents out isn't going to be enough. We need to get people we want in. I sense that going on more than anything. We use the word moderate, but these aren't moderates. Yeah. These are just less extreme delegates.
Well, so what do you think? Robert, does that give you a sense of what the sort of national vibe then in some
Well,
ways?
Yeah. I mean, I think nationally you've seen the Tea Party being a little bit more polarizing as well. I mean, their support has stayed about even, but the percentage of the population who opposes them has increased significantly. I think one of the telling figures about the Tea Party, though, and their clout this year is after the immigration bill passed last year, they had committed themselves to defeating the people who had put this, you know, travesty into place. Not one of those people who supported 116 lost this year. And so I think despite all of their efforts that they didn't deliver on it. And I think it's largely, again, goes back to the efforts of the LDS Church and also to the party and trying to broaden the pool.
Well, and also, I think if you look back at that Mia Love Sandstrom Wimmer race, both Sandstrom and Wimmer are part of that Patrick Henry caucus, mm-hmm. which is sort of could be described as loosely affiliated with the Tea Party. But I think people maybe viewed them as more Tea Party than Mia Love, who is more of a newcomer and less familiar. And I mean, if the Tea Party were really strong, then maybe one of those guys would have won that race.
But you have David Clark, former state former Speaker of the House, gone. Wimmer, gone. Steven Sandstrom, gone. Ken Sumption didn't make it. They had to have been stunned in some ways.
Well, maybe there's a little bit of an anti-legislature feeling going on as well. There's been some challenges up at the legislature, some controversies. We had HB 477 last year that was maybe the most controversial, but there have been some others. And it's possible that another example of that would be Mark Shurtleff, who endorsed Wimmer. And that wasn't enough to pull him over the finish line. And Mark Shurtleff, while not in the legislature, is a longtime Capitol Hill, heavy hitter. So it would seem that if the clout was there, then some of those races might have ended up differently.
One other possible indicator, I think, of the Tea Party strength is 2 years ago, Mike Lee was the darling of the Tea Party.
Yeah.
This year, he endorsed Carl Wimmer, and it didn't help him any. This year, he endorsed John Swallow, who ended up in a primary and had the backing of most of the establishment. And he finished, I think, 842 votes behind Jason Chaffetz in the national committeeman's race. And I just think that this kind of indicates that this is not Mike Lee's group of delegates, and it's a very different crowd.
So, Lisa, you said wouldn't be exactly right to say these were moderate people. But do we have any sense now that this convention – the delegates, anyway, there are in some way more representative of the electorate at large in the state.
Well, certainly the idea that so many people turned out for the caucuses, and again, the LDS Church played a big role in that. Senator Hatch played a big role in that in terms of recruiting delegates that he thought could win and get him over the top at the convention. But the idea that they are more moderate. We're not a moderate state. We're a very red state. And these people are still very conservative. Chris Stewart, who won the 2nd district. Mia Love, who won the 4th district. They're very conservative, and they're not all that different in terms of their positions from the people they defeated. Yeah. It was more circumstances in their case.
But they're just different? Is that the thing? The word novelty was used in a kind of controversial way by Mark Shurtleff, but is that part of it, that they're not part of the establishment, not part of the legislature, don't do any sense?
I think it probably helped them, don't you think?
I think Mia Love is definitely a fresh face, and I think her 6-minute speech that day was the most energetic, the most charismatic. I mean, there wasn't a person in that hall who wasn't focused on the podium when she was speaking. And it wasn't always that way for candidates. And a lot of the candidates who didn't necessarily have a chance of winning in the larger races pulled some interesting, I don't want to call them stunts, but we had one Senate candidate who had a 10-year-old girl speak for the entire time. That was Friedbaum, his entire speech. So
he's unconventional.
Were a lot of video presentations to start things off. But Mia Love's speech, I think, was definitely the most energetic and charismatic of the day. And she, I think, won delegates over in that 6-minute period of time.
Well, and Chris Stewart benefited from all the controversy. Yeah. We had one member of our delegate panel say the other candidates came across as whiners. Nobody likes a whiner. And that's what put him over the top there. So a lot of it was just the energy of the convention, yeah. and the sense that this is your opportunity to prove yourself or to perhaps try to damage another candidate and end up damaging yourself.
So I'm wondering, is it then it's too early to say you're seeing any definitive themes or any shifts politically? But something's going on.
They're less extreme,
okay,
but they're still not moderate. That's what I'd say.
What do you think, John?
And I still think that there's a desire for change, and that may best represented probably by Mia Love, but Chris Stewart would be another example of that. If there was complete satisfaction with the status quo, then you'd think that Carl Wimmer, Dave Clark, John Swallow, all of them would have been able to get 60 and won those races. So. It seems but not a total dissatisfaction, because look at what happened with the governor,
sure,
and with Senator Hatch almost getting to 60. So I guess it's kind of a mixed bag. It's kind of fluid. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I think the other side of this, are they Tea Party, are they not Tea Party coin, is that they do – the candidates who were elected, while maybe not embracing the Tea Party mantra or label – are still very much limited government. Mia Love wants to reduce spending, cut entitlement programs, things like that.
Department of Education.
Department of Education, and do these things that I think are very much in line with what the Tea Party was advocating for 2 years ago. So on some level, the agenda of the Tea Party, while maybe not the label, has been assimilated to other candidates. I think she did benefit from not being seen as the Tea Party candidate. I mean, Carl Wimmer had positioned himself as that person for over a year, getting the Club for Growth endorsement and Freedom Works and lining up behind him. And it just and then when these new delegates came in, you kind of saw him shift and pivot into something that was a little bit more of a I'm a problem solver kind of guy. And I think Mia Love had already kind of established herself as sort of the outside the conventional mainstream candidate.
She won, this was in the second round, but she won 70.5% of the
shocking.
Vote.
Yeah,
the margin I think was surprising.
It was everybody I think was a little bit stunned by that. It was the question going into that second round of balloting was, okay, is she going to be able to line up Steve Sandstrom support, and is that going to be enough to put her over 60%? And wow, is she just? 70%, everybody was just kind of floored by that, I think.
And remember, there was a second speech, right? When you go to the next round, there's another round of speeches. So she already delivered a powerful speech. Then Mark Shurtleff came up and backed Carl Wimmer again and made the novelty comment, which generated some controversy,
yep.
And then she spoke.
Yep.
So I think it's a combination perhaps of that second strong speech, and then maybe the novelty comment did help her a bit as well, although it seemed like a lot of delegates were already going that way anyway.
We heard from members of our delegate panel that that's what they felt, and that's what they were hearing from the other delegates around them, that when Mark Shurtleff used that term to describe her, that was it.
There were boos in the crowd.
Yes.
There were. I don't think that it got her 10%, though. That was that probably made a difference on the margins. I mean, we'd have to, I guess, survey people to find out. But I think she'd already would have been well over 60%. Yeah. I think that may have been a little icing on the cake.
Well, let's see what she says. Mia Love is joining us, mayor of Saratoga Springs, served 6 years on the city council in Saratoga Springs.
Yeah.
Now the
yeah.
Republican nominee for Utah's 4th congressional district. Congratulations first, Mayor Love.
Thank you.
Thanks
Thank
for-
you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, you're hearing us all talk behind your back about all of this. What, so what do you think? What put you over? A lot of people said it was a really terrific speech that you gave. What do you think?
Well, we worked really hard. I mean, I got in front of as many delegates as possible, and the message was the same from the very beginning to the end. Fiscal discipline, limited government, personal responsibility. Putting the power back in the hands of the people. We went in feeling really good with our numbers. Our primary numbers were very, very good, and so we felt really comfortable. We certainly weren't making any predictions, but we're hoping that we can get out without a primary. And so when we did the first round of balloting that came out at 53%, I looked over at a couple of people that were on my campaign, and I said, we could actually do this. We could actually get all of these votes. And so, you know, we already were really within that margin. And Steve Sandstrom and Jay Cobb, such great, great, great opponents, came in and said, we're going to do the right thing and we're going to stand behind Mia so we can try and win this with over 60% of the votes. We were certainly well within that margin. I think they certainly came in and helped with that, and we tied that up. So we're really excited.
So now you face Jim Matheson, of course, reasonably seasoned politician here, fairly popular even in so-called swing districts. What do you make of that contest? Now, I mean, you've said that that the congressman has, I think you put it this way, betrayed Utah values.
Well, if you think about it, what Utah Value stands for, especially in the 4th District, we do stand for limited government. We stand for lower taxes, personal responsibility, fiscal discipline. I've heard he made a couple of comments saying that, you know, I'm way out there. And I believe that he's completely out of touch. What I stand for, especially when it comes to education, is putting the decision-making back in the hands of the teachers and the parents. So many times when federal government gets in with Race to the Top and No Child Left Behind, it's a one-size-fit-all federal solution to education. And it's not doing anything for us. It's not helping us one bit. And so we're trying to put that decision-making back in the hands of the parents and the teachers that are there on the ground trying to do what they can to teach our children, who all have individual personalities, who all learn very differently.
I think he meant you were out there because you want to shut down the U.S. Department of Education. You want to shut down the U.S. Department of Energy. I think that's what he was getting at. Do you?
Well, let's think about this. You know, during George Bush's tenure with No Child Left Behind, the Department of Education expanded its reach through that program, and they increased the budget by 69.6%. What did we get for that? We got there's nothing that showed that the test scores went up. We really got nothing for that, and so it didn't work. When we try and do a one-size-fit-all solution to education, it doesn't do anything. We've got to be able to allow the decision-making to go back into the hands of the teachers and the parents. And as far as I'm concerned, if we can at least push it back to the states, then we're making the right strides in doing that. And in turn, we can, at a federal government, at a federal level, we can stay out of that and allow these states to compete. I think when states are allowed to compete, we'll do a lot better job.
Number of Utahns and organizations, including the LDS Church, we should say, have come out in support of the so-called Utah Compact, what they call reasonable immigration reform that's moderated by the federal government and other states. What's your stance on immigration? Where are you, for example, on the Arizona law, and where are you on the idea of the Utah Compact?
Okay. Well, again, here we are as states trying to do what we can to mitigate a problem, trying to do what we can to fix a solution where the solution really is found at a federal level. There's several things that we have to do. We've got to be able to allow our border security agents to pursue on public lands. We've got to put more resources on the border. I mean, illegal immigration is just a symptom of that. I mean, if you think about drugs, if you think about weapons and all of the things that we need to protect Americans from. That's one. Visas coming in and out of the country. We're able to track visas that are coming in, but we have no way of tracking visas that are leaving. So one of the proposals that I've made is just trying to explore the idea of putting a bond on a visa. So if we put a bond on a visa, we can actually track who's coming into the country, and we can actually track who's leaving so they can get the majority of those bonds back on the way out. We can track who's here and at least be able to have an idea. And last but not least, it is federal government's job to create a uniform rule of naturalization. That is a pathway in. I am a product of legal immigration. I am pro-legal immigration. As a matter of fact, if you think about every single American, one of their parents or ancestors immigrated into this country. So we've got to be able to create a pathway in, and we're solving the problem at the root, not trying to solve the problem in the middle of the story.
You know, we're going to get you back here to talk more particularly about, we'll spend the whole show with you if you'll join us, about your particular issues. Should let me ask you this, though. Should millionaires and billionaires pay more taxes?
Well, I go back and again to do a more of a flat tax. But there's certain things that we have to do in the meantime. This is not an event. It's a process. And so I support a lower the tax rate, broaden the base, simplify the tax code, start eliminating the loopholes that we've got, and then start moving towards, because right now if we went to a flat tax, I believe that the burden would be really heavy. So we've got to start cutting spending to get federal government reined in a little bit on its spending, and then we can start discussing a flat tax.
Where are you on that sort of political spectrum? You see yourself as pretty straight-line conservative? Do you see yourself somewhere more in the center? How do you identify yourself that way?
It's interesting. A lot of people have tried to put me in a box somewhere, and as everybody knows, I'm not easily put in a box. And so, you know, again, I hope that that message that I have of fiscal discipline, and limited government, personal responsibility resonates from Tea Party all the way over to moderate. I have to build coalitions in city council. As a matter of fact, it's all nonpartisan. So we've got to work together to find real solutions, and that's what we've got to do on a federal level. We're going to have to roll up our sleeves and find real solutions to real problems. We need to stop attacking people and start attacking the problems that we've gotten. So whoever will work with me, whoever I'm that candidate, I'm everyone's candidate.
But do you have any liberal positions? If you say you're not in a box, where are you not in a box? Where are you not in a box in terms of your, like, let's say something moderate or left of center? Do you have any positions that strain that way?
Again, I am laser focused on certain things. I mean, a lot of people will spend a lot of time on issues that I'm not focused on. I'm not trying to remodel the kitchen when the house is on fire. So when it comes to being fiscally disciplined, that's what I'm focused on. Some of the other things I'm not as focused on. I'm not going to go out and create policies outside of those three things that I've talked to you about, because I believe that that's where our country's in trouble, and that's where I am.
That's Mayor Mia Love. She is running now for Utah's 4th Congressional District as a Republican. Mayor, again, congratulations and thanks very much for being with us. We'll have you back shortly.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. We need to head to a break, but let me get you all to react. She's good, right? I mean, she's smart and coherent and has a lot of charisma. When you listen to her, as Terry, I'll go to you, that speech that she gave, Jim Matheson has a fight ahead of him, it seems.
Absolutely. Jim Matheson really has to come out and, I think, reinvent himself in some ways. I mean, you look at the 4th Congressional District, which is the new one, really, but everything's sort of been reworked here. Is he going to come out to be more conservative than he already is? I mean, even in Congress right now, he's a blue dot Democrat. Yeah. I mean, he fights Obama on things that most Democrats don't, the Keystone Pipeline, those kinds of things. So, excuse me, is he going to go farther from center to the right, or is he going to appeal to progressives in Utah County? I think that Jim Matheson has to reinvent himself to take on Mia Love.
What do the rest of you think?
He's got his hands full. I mean, obviously, you saw how She kind of avoided answering some pretty direct questions there.
We'll get her back and we'll push her a little bit
which
more.
Which is something, you know, here's his problem, I think. If you're running Jim Matheson's campaign, you're running against a candidate who has a fairly thin record because, you know, like he's mentioned, just a couple terms on the Saratoga Springs Council and as a fairly weak mayor, she doesn't actually vote or get to vote on things there. And so her record isn't very, very you know, but she's also very charismatic and very polished, and I think that's going to be a handful for him. I mean, what do you go after her for? She's, I think, probably the strongest candidate he's faced in the 12 years he's been in Congress.
You know, a couple other things that are worth mentioning. For Mia Love, I think a lot of political observers who were there in the room on Saturday and Sandy were struck by this is a political newcomer coming up to a stage and talking to, you know, 5,000 people or however many folks were there, thousands of people, big crowd, and handling it in a way that was very seasoned. I think a lot of people were impressed by that. And obviously, as you say, she's very articulate. And as for Matheson, one of the challenges for him is that there's been an attempt to make it difficult for him through redistricting. And he's had to do that. You know, that's happened now twice to him. And he's been able to survive and survive and survive. But in that last race that he ran, he had to tack left a little bit because he did face a primary challenger. Mm-hmm. He did win. But now he, like Robert says, he's got a record to defend, all these years of voting and then also statements that he's made. And that's going to be challenging. So, you know, Republicans for many years have been trying to win this seat. And I think a lot of people in the room and Sandy the other day thought that they might have their chance now. This might be it.
Well, this will be an interesting test of whether as a whole the electorate has become more moderate or less extreme. I think we've already seen from Matheson, and the mayor alluded to this, that the Democrats are going to try to paint her as very conservative. You know, David Kirkham, we spoke of him earlier, the Tea Party founder, said, of course she's a Tea Partier. Of course she believes in what we believe in. So she's not just going to be able to continue to say, you can't put me in a box. Democrats are going to try to shove her in a box. A lot of conservatives are going to want to see her in that box. And so we'll have to get a better fix on where she's really at politically, I think.
If I could just make one more point about this is another thing we're going to see in this election, I think. You're going to see the National Party, who really likes Mia Love, putting $1 million into this race. You're going to see Mitt Romney campaigning for her, endorsing her, and you'll probably see Mia Love getting a prominent speaking role at the national convention, because that is a face that the Republican Party wants to put on itself this
She'll
year.
She'll be a national figure. Don't
she
you
will
think
be a national
figure.
Places
like Fox News, places like that.
Within weeks, probably.
And so she's got all of that wind at her back, and Jim Matheson is going to have to find a way to try to, you know, turn that to his advantage, I guess.
I'm late for a break. Robert Gerke is with us, government reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. Lisa Riley Roche covers state and national politics for the Deseret News. John Daly, political reporter for the Deseret News and KSL-TV. Terry Gilday is here, our news director. You can find links to all of their articles and pieces on our website, KUER.org/Radio West. We'll get to your calls, I promise. 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@KUER.org. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the 2012 political campaign season, which is just firming up. State conventions over the weekend have given us a first look at some of the races. You can join us 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@KUER.org. Robert Gerke of the Tribune, Lisa Riley Roche of the Deseret News, John Daly of KSL-TV and the Des here, and Terry Gilday, our news director, joining us in the studio. Let's take some of your calls. Joey has been waiting in Smithfield, Utah. Joey, sorry for the wait. Welcome.
Hey, Doug. My comment is, it was talked about earlier a little bit, and it's more like along the lines of, with the Republican and Democrat parties, to me it seems, are going the way of the past. It's more, you're either a conservative or a liberal, and if you're not either one of those, then you're not going to get elected to any public office anymore. It started with the Tea Party. Now it's even going into the Democratic Party, where I think there's just this past weekend, two Democrat congressmen were elected out because they were too conservative. They're too towards the middle. And so I just want to get your guest comments on what's happened to, you know, moderation, to, you know, making decisions and making I can't think of the word right now.
No, we got
but...
it. No, you did well. Good, great. What do you guys think?
Redistricting. You know, the national debate about redistricting, this is perfect evidence of it. It's harder and harder to win as a moderate anywhere in the country because both parties, attempt to redistrict in a way that benefits them. And it's just gotten harder and harder for the moderates to survive.
Well, I think Jim Matheson will be the real test of that. He's tried to be a very moderate Democrat in a Republican state. And he obviously faces a huge battle with Mia Love. We'll see how he moderates his own positions. We'll also see what kind of a proxy fight we have here in the state with, as Robert was saying, the national money and support that will come in for Mia Love, and certainly similar support that will come in for Jim Matheson. It's going to be interesting, though, because it's not like Matheson is going to allow himself to be painted as a left-of-center Democrat, as the caller was suggesting, the party wants to see in other places. We won't see that here. So it'll be a good fight.
I think the caller raised a pretty interesting point because you heard John Huntsman recently in a couple interviews make some points about how there's no place in the Republican Party for a moderate. I think he compared it to communist China, where they would, do away with people who raise disparate points of views. And I think there is some frustration there. I mean, former Governor Huntsman has talked about a third party needing to potentially rise up if the two-party system can't manage it. So, Joey's not alone, I think, in his frustration in this issue. And I think the interesting thing, though, is in every presidential election, at least, it's always the independents that end up making the decision on who gets elected. I think John's point about congressional politics becoming more polarized in large part because of redistricting is a valid one, too.
Just a quick point on redistricting. You know, Matheson, of course, as we all know, represents the second congressional district as the maps exist now. That district got redrawn. He thought about running for governor. He thought about running for Senate. He ended up moving to the fourth district, thinking that maybe that would be his best chance. And looking at Utah County in the fourth district and now with Mia Love in the race, I mean, those cards were stacked against him when those maps were redrawn in the first place.
But was that a mistake then, to go to the fourth? He couldn't. If you figure you got a race against Carl Wimmer, maybe this is okay.
On paper, the fourth district was probably his best call against a generic Republican candidate. In hindsight, he didn't really get a generic Republican candidate. He got something very different. So it'll be an interesting year.
Joy, thanks. 801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Let's see. Steve with us in Salt Lake. Steve, hi.
Hi. I used to think of myself, at least in the terms of the state and federal races, as being a Utah Democrat. But for the last number of years, I figured it did no good until I send my money to one of the Udalls or to Al Franken or somebody like that. But I'm wondering if there's any chance that maybe I should reevaluate this. I look at Gary Herbert, and I think if there was ever anybody ripe to be knocked off, either within his own party or by a Democrat, it would be him. I mean, he has kind of combined that Blagojevich stew of suborning corruption in his administration and being completely incompetent when he gets caught in terms of the Utah County highway rebuild and losing the Medicaid records and his relations with the legislature of not exactly been very adept, but I'm wondering, does Gary just basically, is he able to stay out of the way and keep his head down? Why is that guy still there, and does Peter Cook have a chance against him?
Mm. A lot of good questions in there. I guess the first one, though, is can a Democrat really, at this point, win statewide? Does any of that matter?
Well, this year, 2012, with Mitt Romney at the top of the ticket, is a very, very tough year for Democrats. I mean, if it makes 5%, 10%, pick a number, difference in every race in terms of turnout, it's a tough year. At the same time, Peter Cook is the kind of candidate that Democrats have probably never had before, to my knowledge. He's a former general. He has a business background. He's LDS.
Really charismatic.
And he's a Democrat.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's unusual. So I think Democrats think they might have their best chance in some time, but it's a very tough year for them.
Yeah, they don't seem to have the kind of candidates that are going to attract the kind of national support that it's going to take to beat a Republican in this state, especially in a statewide race. I talked to Scott Howell the other day. He's not anticipating getting a lot of national help for his race. Well, that's not going to allow him to go very far, frankly, as a Democrat. And to Steve's point about the governor, everything he was saying now, we heard in the last election cycle, because of circumstances. Herbert ran just 2 years ago. Peter Caroon, a very popular county mayor, very strong candidate. Unlike Peter Cook, Peter Caroon had real political experience, had won races before.
Incredibly popular.
Exactly. And yet, in the end, he was beaten very badly by the governor, despite a lot of controversy in that race. Democrats weren't able to exploit that. So I don't know what to tell you, Steve. I'm not sure what it's going to take. It's going to have to be a combination of really experienced candidates, some real help from the outside, I think, to overcome the problem that Democrats will always have in a state dominated by Republicans, and probably a lot of luck, too.
Well, let's get some perspective from a Democrat. Jim DeBacchus is joining us. He's the chairman of the state's Democratic Party, joining us by phone from his office in Salt Lake City. Jim DeBacchus, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Always a pleasure to be here, Doug.
Okay, so did you hear that last exchange?
Yes.
Okay. So respond to that, because this does seem to illustrate what may be the dilemma for Democrats, that even in an administration that has some questionable parts of its record, it's going to be really difficult to make any headway. What do you think?
Well, I think that's pessimistic. Utahns have a pretty good record of starting at the top of the ticket and then kind of checkerboarding here and there. And the governor is a sweet man. He's the exact kind of guy I'd like as a neighbor. I've known him for many years, but it's becoming very, very clear that he just isn't a leader, and he just can't run this giant operation of a state. And I think when people begin to recognize that General Cook is a commander, he is a leader, he's the kind of guy that really can solve these problems, whether it's the alcohol beverage or sending out all of these wrong information or to bad guys or the UDOT scandals, governor just doesn't seem to have the management prowess to run things. I'm optimistic that the people of Utah are going to pick up on that, and we will win the governorship this year.
What's the main element of your strategy? When you first took over this job and you evaluated what you may have perceived as the problems with the Democratic Party, what did you identify as the thing that you needed to get at first?
62% of this state is LDS. 7% of LDS people self-identify as Democrats. Peter Caroon could not have won the governorship with a political plan that his people had. Peter is a great man and would have made a great governor, but the plan was to get everybody but the active LDS. And the truth is, statewide, there aren't enough players. And so if Democrats are serious about winning in the state, and we are, it meant we have to live up to our ideals, and our tent has to be big enough for everybody. And somehow, preposterously, we have said, well, we have room kind of for everybody but LDS people.
But wait, what does that mean? What does that mean? Why couldn't? Is it the abortion thing? Is it what is it? Why wouldn't a Mormon vote for a Democrat? What's the salient issue that you've identified?
Well, I think at least part of it is was our own attitude as Democrats, that we're kind of the non-Mormon party, that it's our job to stand up to Mormons, and it is to do those things. Well, because if you actually look at Utah Democrats, and people are always saying, well, you get the fringe on both sides. The truth is, the Utah Democratic Party is not Pelosi. It has nothing to do with the mess in Washington. It's not ideological. It's Ben McAdams or Ross Romero or David Litvak or Pat Jones. Are these radicals? The Republicans have them, but we never have been, and we aren't. The Utah Democratic Party is not a party of radicals or ideologues. So what we need to do is reach out to LDS people and say, look, the Republicans have gone off to this extreme. We are moderate, mainstream, roll up your sleeves, kind of solve the problem kind of people, just like LDS people are. And we need together to protect the state and the future from this onslaught of the right that thought that Bob Bennett was too liberal to be a senator.
Let me play a clip from the convention, the Democratic Party convention. Our own Dan Baumus spoke with, or one of our members of our team, I can't remember which, spoke with Matt Hansel. He was a delegate from Saratoga Springs, in fact, participated. Let me play this clip and have you, because I want to ask a few questions about this.
I don't have anything to compare it to, being a first-time delegate myself. But everybody, every indication I have is that this is a record turnout, record numbers of people, and I think that it's people like myself who have been dormant for a number of years with regard to our political activity, coming out for the first time and being active participants, that could surprise a lot of people come November.
He said dormant. Do you think that's right?
Yes, I think that both two things. We started the LDS caucus about 8-9 months ago, and it has become the largest caucus in the Democratic Party. We had 1,200 people there, and we're not trying to get that hardcore Utah County Republican. These are people that have always been Democrats and think like Democrats and act like Democrats and talk like Democrats, but they weren't sure they felt comfortable in the Utah Democratic Party. They weren't sure they were going to be welcome. And in some cases, they perhaps weren't welcome enough. So as we begin to say to LDS people and to others, really, not just LDS people, come home. Really, the Democrats is the place for reasonability. It's not ideological. It's not Mike Lee, who is not, in my opinion, there really representing Utah, but he's got this kind of visions of the Constitution in his head all the time, and he really isn't a representative. Utah Democrats are simply not that way. And I think that's going to resonate.
Let me get Scott Howell on the line. He served 3 terms in the state Senate as the Senate Minority Leader, recently won his party's nomination over the weekend as the candidate for the U.S. Senate to run against Orrin Hatch. He's joining us today from his home. Scott Howell, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Doug. What a illustrious panel you have there. It's kind of like competition all coming together and agreeing on things. It's great.
Don't have a lot of time. I wanted to get your sense of talk, if you would, first about your LDS. Talk about that Mormon dynamic and how it plays out in the Democratic Party.
You know, it plays out perfect to the Utah voter. I mean, these are the values that the majority of Utahns apply towards.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
That means that they're looking for someone who's compassionate, someone who's honorable, someone who understands the notion of service, and someone who's willing to look at both sides of the aisle. They're not so partisan that they can't reach across to work with President Obama or President Romney. And that means that they're looking for someone they can trust. That means that they want someone to get in, serve, and then get out. It also means that they want someone who's had experience and who's won in highly Republican places in this state, where they can go in and say, you know, that guy or that woman supports who I am, and I can trust them. And that's exactly what it means. So, there's a fact of life here that we all have to come to realize that if we were in Rome, we'd be courting the Vatican, and at the same time, we've got to recognize the rights and principles of other religions in this state and minorities and people of color. And I think that's exactly what that means. And you know, the greatest day of my life, Doug, was when I, the day before left the legislature, someone came in and sat down and met with me, and they said, you know what, Scott, we voted for you 3 times. We had no idea you were LDS. We're LDS. We really appreciate your service. That very afternoon, another couple came in and said, we're Catholic. We go to St. Thomas Parish more. We had no idea you were LDS. You always answered us. You always made us feel like you were part of the community. And thank you. So I think that's exactly what that means.
You lost to Orrin Hatch before in 2000. What did you learn from that, and why do you figure you have a chance now?
Well, you know, politics have changed since Orrin Hatch was first elected. You know, we've got to start focusing on smaller government, dealing with the deficit, and that's increased since Orrin went in from under a billion dollars to $14 trillion. You know, he's a great American in many ways, but he hasn't recognized the realities of the political environment and the challenges that our whole country faces, because he's simply been there too long. He's lost context of where America needs to go. So things like seniority on a committee, bringing federal money back to home, that used to be an asset, but now they're marks of being a Washington insider, which he is. So I think that for us, I've learned a ton about. He told me that he would not run again after the last time I ran against him. So I've also learned that now's the time, and it's time for a change.
That's Scott Howell, joined us today from his home in Salt Lake. Scott, thanks very much.
Thanks, Doug.
Jim DeBacchus, chairman of the State Democratic Party. We'll have you both on, by the way, to talk in more detail about all of this. Jim, thanks to you.
It's always a pleasure, Doug.
So I wanted to sort of wrap things up a little bit. First of all, talk about Jim DeBacchus, if you would, in this new strategy. You know, a lot of people are saying he's more outspoken than some Democrats have been in the past. They hearken back to the Randy Horiuchi days when he would dress in costumes and be flamboyant and funny and those kinds of things. Are we seeing that with Jim DeBacchus? And are we seeing something new in the Democratic Party?
I think so. I mean, I think you saw it right there. I mean, he's outspoken. He has colorful quips that he throws out, and he's aggressive. And at the same time, they're obviously courting LDS folks, and this has been a theme for Democrats for a long time. Yeah. But they're continuing to go down that road too.
Yeah,
I guess going back to our word of the day, moderate. You know, here are the Democrats trying to moderate at least how their party is seen, by going out after Mormons who are traditionally seen in the state as being conservative, as being behind this being the reddest of red states. So it's an interesting strategy, especially at the same time we have this idea that the Republicans are somehow becoming less extreme, maybe they'll meet in the middle somehow. I guess that's what Jim is hoping for. It's an interesting strategy. We'll see how it goes, but it's hard to envision immediate results from that.
Less than a minute. Let me ask you this finally. What's going to be the influence, Robert, you first, of the presidential primary, presidential race, Mitt Romney generating a lot of excitement? What effect is that going to have on the races here?
Oh, I think, you know, it's gonna bring out more of those voters who might otherwise stay at home, which means probably 2-4% bump in down ticket races, which in a lot of the legislative races is going to make a difference. I think you'll also probably see an Obama effect too on people like Jim Matheson, who it's going to be a weight, I guess, to bear in this state for in a lot of voters' minds.
What do you think, Terry?
I think Romney, I agree with Robert. Romney is really going to bump up the voter turnout, and I think that Orrin Hatch will continue to align himself with Mitt Romney as close as he can to try and push himself through that primary. He said real quickly, he said just after he went to a primary vote that he wished he had now the time and energy to go out and campaign with Romney and for other Republican senatorial candidates around the country, but now he's devoted to a primary. So we'll see what happens.
Terry Gilday is our news director here at KUER. Robert Gerke, government reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. Lisa Riley Roche covers state and national politics for the Deseret News. John Daly, political reporter for the Deseret News and KSL-TV. Thank you all very much. You can find links, by the way, to their stories on our website, KUER.org/Radio West. Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.